Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And now we enter into this long discovery. I've been very interested in the nature of competition. I've been curious about competition, where it comes from, how it affects people. I've watched what happens with sibling rivalry. I've watched as our society feeds on competition, how democracy is born on competition. There's so much to present about the psychology of competition that I think it's fascinating, and I think you'd learn a great deal, and I think it would help you in your work life, in your play life, in your social life, in your love life. So we're going to be presenting a bunch of material about it, but we're going to start off with some very, very interesting stuff. Now, here's the beginning of it, my friends. Hold up your right hand. This is for everyone out there. I want you to put the back of your hand, look at the back of your right hand, and look at your fingers. I'm going to ask you to compare your ring finger, that's the third one over from your thumb, right? Or is that the fourth one, Roberta? Your fourth finger is your ring finger, right, if you include the thumb?
Right.
And compare that to your index finger, which is the one you point with, your second finger. Which is longer? This may seem silly, but give it a shot, because we've got some interesting science following it.
Well, you have to ask which is longer between your ring finger and your index finger. It's those two fingers that are
only those two fingers,
in question.
Right. So we need a comparison between your ring finger, and you may not see it at first. You may see that by squirming your hand one way or another it changes, but eventually you'll get your hand level, and you will find that either your ring finger or your index finger is longer.
Well, for some people, it's a little confusing because they look almost the same length. So what you have to do is keep your hand really straight, perpendicular to the ground. And then you'll have an idea of which one is longer.
You probably measure it, too, you know. Probably measure your fingers, too, to see.
Well, if you keep your hand completely straight, completely perpendicular, you can tell. But there's a tendency to move the wrist slightly. So you just have to keep it straight.
We're about to give you some information, my friends, that you will be able to use on all your friends. This is great stuff. Roberta, you're the one who came up with this. It's terrific.
Well, I was doing the research for this program, and I found that on the British Journal of Psychology, there is an article entitled What the Length of Your Fingers Means. And it's a study that says that depending on certain hormonal levels, those two fingers would have different lengths. And depending on which is longer, that would mean that your brain has developed in a certain or other way. And so, Armand, do you want to share with our audience what the difference would be?
Well, remember, we're talking about a comparison between your ring and your index finger, your ring finger and your index finger, which is longer. If you have a longer ring finger than index finger, you tend to have more testosterone.
Correct. And that's true from birth and before. That means that while you were in the womb, while you were a fetus, you were exposed to more testosterone through the pregnancy. And then throughout your life, you have had higher levels of testosterone than average. And that's when your ring finger is longer than your index finger.
So, you know, if you've ever been curious about what were my hormones like when I was little, you know, you think about hormones only being important after pubescence or stuff like that. No, they're very important when you're young. Because testosterone levels determine a great deal. I look at your fingers, Roberta, right? Your index finger and your ring finger, almost alike.
The index finger is slightly longer. And so when that's the case, it means that estrogen has been predominant through pregnancy, I mean, when I was in the womb and throughout my life. And so what we're talking about is brain development, hemisphere development. So it gets a little bit too complicated to really get into that. But basically, it has been found, and this was done to understand the brains of scientists.
Right. The it was at the University of Bath.
Of Bath,
of
in
all
England,
places, right?
Where it was found that the professors, male professors, that were teaching things like physics and math, had longer index fingers, and that is a sign of higher levels of estrogen compared to testosterone. So that was quite a surprise. And yet it seems that higher levels of estrogen lead to a certain kind of development in the right hemisphere of the brain, whereby the individual becomes proficient at hard science.
Just in case you don't know, when we talk about estrogen and progesterone, estrogen and testosterone, testosterone is usually associated with maleness as a quality. Estrogen is associated with femaleness.
Right. Those are the two main male and female, respectively, hormones that determine all of the secondary characteristics that differentiate the looks of males and females, the body development, the genitalia, the hair, where it grows and how much of it. All of that depends on testosterone and estrogen.
Okay, so if you have testosterone dominance, you tend to be more male.
More male, right.
And if you have estrogen dominance, you tend to be more female.
But both male and female have both hormones. It's just a matter of levels, amounts.
So then they looked at these scientists. They found these hard scientists. Now, we want to distinguish between hard scientists and social scientists.
Right.
Hard scientists are the ones who study hard data. You know, the physics, math, biology, computer science, maybe even medicine, you know, with the exception of the practice of it. It's basically a hard science. You're studying facts, and
right,
you're memorizing facts, and you're working with facts. Social sciences are sciences that involve people, like psychology, education, sociology, political science.
Right. And Those people who become proficient at those science, that kind of science, tend to have or have had higher levels of testosterone.
The ones who are, which you said that.
That the ones that do the more.
The hard science?
No. The soft science. The more like the political, the social, the psychology, the education, which is different from what we have thought all along, right? Isn't this a surprise? I mean, we tend to think of social sciences as being more the department of females, and hard science like math being more the department of males. Well, it turns out that
this
is showing a very different picture.
In order for a male to be a good hard scientist, he must have enough estrogen.
Right.
To balance his brain. Now, there's reasons why, which we're not going to go into at the moment, about spatial relationships and things that women have that men don't have, that femaleness has, that male doesn't have. But in order to really be strong in the hard science, you need to have that estrogen level, and it means your fingers, your forefinger, it must be longer.
And vice versa, Armand. For females to be good at,
social
science, they have to have enough maleness that they can be assertive enough and outgoing enough, that they can express themselves enough, that they can be effective in that line of work.
I wonder if that's why there are so many women psychotherapists.
Well, my theory about that, when we spoke about this a while ago, is that because historically for the past 200 years or so, it has been a lot more difficult for females to get an education than it has been for males. In fact, probably up until about 50 years ago, women were not even going to school beyond high school at the most. It was the only choice that a woman could go into if she wanted to pursue a higher level of education. She could only go into social science or psychology or education. She couldn't really compete in the research science world with the, you know, astronomers and physicists. So those were the only branches of science she could go into and be successful. So that's my theory as far as why so many women chose social science as a field of work.
But when they would choose that field of work, Roberta, they would choose it and they would be kind of in a passive role in the past. So in other words, as a social scientist, you would be more in a passive role. What did made them develop in the woman, the political scientist, the sociologist, the aggression, the dominance of a psychotherapist, of a leader in many ways? And that is beginning to show us that is an increase in the testosterone level. With a higher testosterone level, you tend to become more in the field of soft science, of social science.
Mm-hmm. And you have a longer ring finger.
And then you have a longer ring finger.
So. And if you have a longer index finger, then you have a predominance of estrogen.
Think about it again. Here we are, my friends. Look down at your fingers. I mean, you look at my fingers, it's woof.
Yeah.
It's quite a difference, right?
Quite a difference.
What
yes.
do you see?
Well, your ring finger is quite a bit longer than your index.
I got a stumpy index finger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really quite a comparison,
mm-hmm.
right? Whereas yours are not. I mean, yours are almost equal with
the index.
Index finger is significantly not dwarfed.
Well, my index finger is almost as long as the middle finger, definitely a little bit longer than the ring finger. But yes, it shows a predominance of estrogen. And yet, the difference between those two fingers in me is less than in your hand.
In many people, they're going to have a much bigger difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people with very long index fingers,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the ideal here is we're seeing is that you would be the most female if you have the longest index finger.
You know what I'm thinking? You know, in movies...
I was thinking about nails.
Right.
About doing... Was that what you were thinking?
Well, I was thinking about witches in movies. You know how
they have this
very long index with the long nail, and you know, like I just saw a movie with a witch in it. What was it? Men in Tights, funny movie. But anyway, so there was a witch in there, and she had a long index finger with a long, long nail. But actually, when we were talking about why would estrogen, through the millions of years of human evolution, why would estrogen promote a longer index finger? What's the purpose of that? My guess is as good as yours. We're not that far yet in the research, but my guess is it has something to do with motherhood. Because I know that when my kids were little, there were all kinds of things I had to do with my index finger to take care of my kids. So that's my theory.
Your index finger is more useful for taking care of your kids.
Well, cleaning a little nose or a little ear, you know, like doing things with your index that require. But also I thought of gathering berries and roots because women were the gatherers in the hunter-gatherer society.
And for men having...
A long index.
Shorter index fingers.
Right.
I can see that for things that you need that need a short. Like you can't really pull a bow if you're a hunter. You know, you can't really pull a bow back with a very long finger. It gets in the way. So the shorter finger becomes more accurate, I think. It's just all interesting theory, friends, but it's not a theory about the evidence.
Right.
The shorter your index finger, the more male hormone you have.
Right.
And the longer your index finger, the less testosterone you have.
And this is in relation to the ring finger.
In relation to the ring finger, right. It's not by comparing, I want to compare my finger to you. Now, you consider this in our current world, right, where everybody is text messaging and developing their thumbs, too.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know about what a long finger means, forefinger. Now what does a big thumb mean?
Oh, there's all kinds of research in that department, too.
All kinds of selectiveness.
Yeah.
Now, the length of fingers is directly genetically linked to the sex hormones, and a person with an index finger shorter than the ring finger will have more testosterone. Okay, now that's an... And now it goes a step further. There's a psychology lecturer, Dr. Mark Brosnan, has found that men teaching the hard science, as we said, have higher levels of estrogen. And the reverse is true. Women, male academics with longer ring fingers, that means with the shorter ones, tended not to be in science, but in social science.
So what this is saying, basically, is that while this research shows one thing, the opposite has also been believed and proven throughout the years of research in this field. So things get a little bit confusing, but in the end, the end result of all this is that the people who do best at hard science are not, as we used to think, the very analytical, sequential, rational, dry thinkers. They're actually the people who are able to be more balanced with both hemispheres, and they have as much female as they have male brain, and vice versa. That's really the end result of this. But as far as competition goes...
That's exactly... What does this have to do with competition, Roberta?
Right, well, it has a lot to do with competition, because competition is... different on many different levels. What we have found is that competition, let's say, on the sexual level or the social level...
Wait, before we go there, how about the difference between male and female competition? Since we're talking about male-female hormone.
Okay, sure.
The difference between male competition and female competition is historically, male competition is testosterone-driven.
Male competition is based on aggression, physical aggression.
And physical aggression is based on testosterone.
Based on testosterone, yes.
So the more testosterone you have, the more aggressive you are, the more competitive you are as a man. Therefore, the shorter your index finger, the more competitive you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, and it sounds funny. If you're hiring somebody for a job and you want somebody who's going to be really competitive, ask them, look at their fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, therefore, in women, the longer index finger means that they have less testosterone and therefore are less driven competitively. Now, we're going to talk about the difference between social competition and sexual competition. We're not talking about competition with other women. We're talking about competitive drive. We're talking about that drive to get ahead, to stand on top of the heap, to climb over the other people, you know? That thing that makes you go ahead, the thing that makes you want to win that race, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about it with runners, male and female, right, it is the lean body that is developed. And what does a lean body do for you as far as testosterone goes?
Testosterone, of course, increases muscle mass and decreases adipose tissue, so it favors the development of larger muscle mass. So the less fat you have in your body, the less estrogen you're going to have. And the more fat you have, the higher estrogen levels you're going to have. And testosterone is the opposite. The higher testosterone, the less fat you can accumulate, because of course, I mean, if you think about evolution, men have evolved with the need to move their bodies in order to survive more than females. Females actually need to do the opposite. When they are in their years of fertility, they need to be able to accumulate some fat, because when there is a baby, that baby needs to be fed through the mother's accumulated reserves of fat. So this all has to do with competition, in the sense that the higher testosterone levels, the lower the fat levels, the more competitive a person is. And when you look at these women in runners or athletes, they have very, very, very little fat in their bodies, so much so that sometimes their period don't come anymore, because there's not enough fat to allow for the hormonal shift that brings on a menstruation.
Not to go off the subject too far, But if you think of the reason why many people are attracted to exercise and to streamline their bodies, is because there's an aversion to fat in bodies, an aversion to it, and that women want to look more attractive. Now, of course, we're going to say more attractive to who, and many women would say more attractive to themselves, but there's a biological imperative that says be more attractive to attracting males so that you could be selected or you could be available to have babies and mates, right? So now a woman wants to look more attractive, so she diets. And she doesn't put any, she cuts down her fat to, what's the lowest fat you could have on a human body and still be alive? 2%?
Just about, yeah.
2%, right? She's get her fat all the way down. So now to become more attractive, she has gotten thin, right? It's so much so that she's, you know, even if you think about it, what implants do in some way is they replace the fat glands of the breasts,
right,
you know what I mean?
Replace the real fat.
The real fat. So you've gotten less and less fat, therefore less and less estrogen, therefore more and more testosterone. And now a man or someone of the opposite sex would look at you and he would say, boy, you're attractive, but he won't feel the response that he would have to an estrogenic female.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has gotten a bit confusing because of, I think humans end up creating a whole host of emotional and thinking patterns that maybe deviate from what evolution and nature originally were designed to do. But what we're talking about here is actually the way it was set up through the millions of years of evolution. And what Armand is suggesting here is that sometimes what we observe in the modern women is because they have to compete in a male-dominated world, so in the social arena they have to be more like males, even the looks, it is expected that a woman should be lean like a male. So she goes and tries to make herself look like a male, and yet she still gets the implants because unless she has that little bit extra fat, she's not going to look attractive at all. So there's kind of an incongruence there that can be very confusing to the brain of a woman. Should I lose fat or should I have more fat? What should I do? And then who am I going to end up attracting once I lose all my fat?
Now, here comes to another issue. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're talking as evolutionary psychologists now. We're talking about evolutionary development of the human mind and where it led us to be. We're going to be getting much further into this, but we're laying the groundwork for a discussion about competition. Let's look at what happens to men and women. And now this could, we call it male and female, but you know, it could be male and male and it could be female and female because there are enough characteristics to suggest that there are men who have high levels of estrogen and women who have high levels of testosterone, right? Mm-hmm. And they may prefer same-sex relationships,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't determine it, but it may prefer. But let's look at why men are attracted to subordinate women.
Well, because they're easier to control. I mean, because historically, women in the past, let's say 10,000 years, have been expected to cooperate with the social agenda of males. Therefore, if I expect my woman, partner or relative to cooperate with me, I am going to foster a kind of behavior that can only come out of a woman who does not have a whole lot of testosterone, because women that have higher levels of testosterone are not cooperative necessarily.
It's not only the competition, Roberta, but the tendency of a woman who has a high level of testosterone to go off and sleep with other men.
Right.
Right, is the way that it's correlated. So in other words, if a woman has a high level of estrogen and seen as a subordinate or submissive woman.
Cooperative, I like
to call. Cooperative, we could say. Mm-hmm. Then the men are more attracted to that. Dominant men are more attracted to that.
Well, what was found in a study, they went to college age students and they showed a picture of a woman to the males and a man to the females, and they said, this is going to be your boss. How do you feel about it? What was found was that the females were fine with having a boss who was male. Not all the men were okay with having a boss who was female. So females are okay with behaving cooperatively, which means non-competitively, which means, you know, to basically go along with. Males can accept to cooperate with other males, but find it very difficult, if not downright impossible, to cooperate when it's the female who is in control. So when it comes to competition, what does that mean?
Well, now we have to qualify this. Dominant men, men with high levels of testosterone, meaning men with short index fingers.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know,
and
it's
really true. I mean,
so
every
simplistic,
person
it makes me laugh, but it's
every
true.
Person we
interviewed,
checked,
right?
It confirmed. Yes.
Right. So men with more, or people with shorter index fingers,
compared to their ring fingers.
Compared
this is not in
finger.
Absolute. This
right.
is in their own hands.
In your own hand. Are people with more testosterone? Men with more testosterone choose women with more estrogen and less testosterone.
Right.
That's as simple as it gets.
Yes.
And it gets that way because in natural selection, there was a tendency for the male to want to control the female's movements so that he would not be siring somebody who had babies by another mate. So he wanted to control that female's movements.
Right.
And so he wants somebody controllable. Makes sense.
And
natural
also,
selection.
These are the species in which is not only not only humans, but there are other species as well, where there's the highest, the biggest difference in body size between male and female.
Okay. Then they found the opposite, which is fascinating. Women with higher levels of testosterone, meaning women who had longer index fingers compared to their ring fingers. Did I do that one right? No, shorter
right,
index fingers
right.
compared to their ring fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Tended not to have, they tended to attract men who had higher estrogen levels.
Right.
Now, this is, if it sounds confusing to you, if you're one of those women who tend to be aggressive in the world and have gone through this world feeling like you've moved and you've taken care of yourself and you're strong, but all you wind up with is little boys, there may be because there's a biological signal being sent out by the fact that you're one of those short-fingered people.
Well, but, I mean, we could go into all kinds of social explanations for
which
that.
Which we're going to do later.
We're
right.
going to do at a different time. But, yes, we're basically saying that the higher the testosterone, the more likely you are to be competitive in some way. And that means that you want to control your environment. Basically, it comes down to that. What is competition but wanting to have your environment just so, right?
So men with higher testosterone and lower estrogen tend to choose women with higher estrogen and lower testosterone.
Who will
women,
fit in that environment without disrupting it, without causing disturbance. And so that makes sense. Vice versa. Same thing.
And the same thing is true on the other side. Women with higher testosterone tend to select men who have lower testosterone.
Right.
Hey, we'll be right back. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're taking this is WBAI
99.5
FM on your dial in
New York City.
That was good.
Thank you.
Here's a little music for you, my friends. I think here's a little music for you.
There is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's going to take a second to give you a little music. I have special music for you
today. It's nice music.
You know
yes.
what's good about this music?
What's good about it?
It's both.
Yes, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
I've often wondered about what's the real attraction of certain kinds of music. Certain kinds of music are very testosteronic.
Yeah, this
hard
is
word,
balanced,
right?
Right.
And then others have a combination of both. Here's one with a combination of both. So bossa nova, huh? You know Maria? Roberta Maria.
I do know.
You know, I know Roberta Maria. You know, this is Armand DeMille with you with Roberta Maria Atti. We're talking about competition, and we're talking, believe it or not, talking about competition, and we're talking about men attracted to women. Now, how does competition relate to people's attraction to maleness and femaleness? Well, of course, we have two kinds of competition out there. There are three kinds, but we're going to talk about two of the three kinds.
Well, we have, of course, the social competition, which is what we've been discussing up until this point, mostly. Social meaning wanting to get ahead in life, wanting to be at the top, wanting to be, wanting to have some things, wanting to have some power, some control, some money, some, you know, some things like that, that
where you stand in the
society,
in the fight,
right,
to achieve more than maybe the other guy.
And this, of course, is all relative to what kind of society you live in, because different societies and cultures have different value systems, so it's not an absolute. But then we have sexual competition, and that has to do with mating. It has to do with behavior in relation to sexuality, directly with how you behave in the face of your mate, your partner. And then there is another level.
Let's stick with the two.
These two. Okay, so social and sexual.
And sexual.
And what's interesting about them is that they don't always coexist in the same individual in the same way.
This is the most fascinating part. Somebody could be highly competitive on a social level and non-competitive on a sexual level. And when we say sexual level, when we say sexual level, we mean specifically getting out there to find.
coordinated monthly test of the broadcast stations of your area. Equipment that can quickly warn you during emergencies is being tested. If this had been an actual emergency, such as a natural or man-made disaster, official messages would have followed the alert tone. This station serves the New York operational area. This concludes this test of the emergency.
Okay.
Are we back? Okay, I'm sorry. Where
okay, we? So it takes a competitive individual to pursue a mate, but it also takes a competitive individual to protect the relationship once that has been established, because, of course, there's always going to be competition that tries to come in and disrupt that relationship by stealing away the mate, you know, from one or the other of the partners. So competition on the sexual level means the pursuit of a mate and the protection of the relationship once that partnership has been established. And some people are highly, highly possessive and competitive in that department.
We're just going to review that for a moment because I know we had an emergency announcement. Let me just say it again. There is a social level of competition and a sexual level of competition. Everybody gets involved in this in one or another way. If you're a human, you're going to be involved socially in the competition world. And we're going to talk about different ways you could be there. And then you're also going to be involved in the sexual world, as Roberta said. That's your mate selection and defending your turf. So let's see the four kinds of competition that there are. We're going to use four categories.
One is the competitive.
Now that means competitive aggressive.
Right. One is the cooperative.
And the cooperative. Now what's the cooperative? That's the one who doesn't compete. That's the non-competitive.
Cooperative behavior is when people will do anything but compete. They will cooperate, meaning they will go along with someone else's agenda. They will be helpful. They will be solicitous. They'll be ready to do your bidding, but they will not compete with you. So those are
with
the cooperatives.
You or with anyone else?
With anyone. They don't compete.
They're the non-cooperative.
No. There's the competitive and the cooperative.
Okay. So one form of non-competitiveness is cooperative.
Cooperate.
And then think about yourself for a minute, my friend.
And usually, I have to say that the competitive people don't cooperate.
Right, they don't cooperate unless it's part of their competition. If you're going to do a team sport where you have to do a relay.
Well, of course, right. But what I mean, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I made that distinction.
Yeah, it's not a solo job necessarily because you could be competitive as an army. You know, you could be all together and doing it, but here's what we're distinguishing now. Social competition versus sexual competition. One type is the aggressive competitive type. The person who says, I'm going to get to the top of the heap. I'm going to get the biggest car. I'm going to get the nicest house. I'm going to win. I'm going to look the prettiest. I'm going to aggressively out there. The second kind.
And I'm not going to do what anyone else says. I should
right.
Do.
I'm going to do it my own way. I have self-determination.
Even if I choose to cooperate with a team of I don't know, football, but it's I choose to cooperate with that. So it's still my choice.
Yeah,
my,
even if the coach tells
agenda.
Me what I should do,
but
I'll do that.
Because I choose to.
Because I choose to.
Yeah.
And then there becomes the non-cooperative one, which is one says, that's crazy. Why should you be involved in such a thing? I'm going to take it easy. What do you want? You want me to run faster? I'll run faster. What do you want me to do? You want me to do my job? I'll do my job. They feel like they're going to spend more of their time relaxing than involved in this competition.
You're talking about the anti-competitive?
No, I'm talking about the cooperative.
The cooperatives, yeah. The cooperatives find
it's an easy life.
Easier to find a spot usually near a competitive individual in the surroundings of someone who is in control, and then they just get along with that.
Sure. And if
because it's easier, it takes less effort.
If you're the mate of somebody who's a competitor, it's kind of terrific, you know. They
make all decisions.
They do all the work, and you kind of get all the goodies.
Well, not necessarily they do all the work. Sometimes in a relationship like that, the competitive individual may be the one who makes all the decisions, and the cooperative one may do all the work.
True. Okay, the work of trying to make the decisions.
Yeah.
Decision-making is tough, my friends.
Well, it's a behavior that requires a certain level of individualistic assertiveness, and cooperative individuals don't like the feeling of that. They don't like to assert themselves necessarily. They prefer to
let the cooperative.
They prefer to let someone else be assertive,
and
because
there's
a risk involved.
Do you know why?
There's a risk involved with assertion.
No, that's not why. It's because they got longer index fingers.
That's why.
It really is.
How could I forget?
You forget about a long index finger. The shorter your index finger, the more aggressive you're going to be when compared to your ring finger. This is the basis of the program today. And if you haven't heard that, you could get a copy. You could listen to this on the internet.
You know, I'm thinking about the Enneagram, Armand. The eight, the one and the eight would be the competitive, the more competitive. And the twos would and sixes would be more cooperatives. I'm just thinking.
I understand. We would, if we were alone, we would be doing that.
Right. Okay.
Right. And the audience who follows us would be now. So there's this world of competition, and everybody gets involved. Some gets involved as a cooperator. They say, yes, in this world of competition, you lead me, I'll follow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you go to a rock concert, and you're somebody who follows the music of the person making the music. That's terrific. You don't have to compete with the musician.
Right.
You enjoy dancing to somebody else's beat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then if you're highly competitive and you got a short index finger, you are going to set the beat yourself.
Yep.
No wonder I was a drummer.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about that as a kid. Why did I choose drums of all instruments? All right. So now there's a third kind of competition. A third strategy, which is the anti-competition. I'm not going to be involved in competition. I'm not going to cooperate with competition, nor am I going to be competitive.
Well, that's someone who feels that they are above the game. They are so far above the game that they don't engage in the game because it's below them.
Or they may be afraid of the game.
Well, that may be the real reason, but I don't think a person like this would ever admit that that's why.
I'll make you bet they got long index fingers.
Possible, yeah.
You know what I mean? They may think to themselves, I don't want to get involved in competition because competition is what destroys the planet,
mm-hmm.
you know, except that it's what makes everything grow,
mm.
you know, and so I reject it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's possible that they might have long index fingers and be, you know, someone like a physicist who says, hey, I know someone like that. He's brilliant mind, very intelligent, and he lives so frugally. He is not in the competitive game when it comes to social status, but he's definitely in the competitive game when it comes to thinking, meaning that he loves to use his mind in a certain way, but he will not play the game of who's going to win the most.
Who's going to publish the paper?
No.
Who's going to get it out there? And, you know, most scientists do not publish as much.
Right.
They don't, because it's kind of a crazy world. It's a world in which if you publish more papers, you're more competitive. But remember, you have a higher level of estrogen if you're a hard scientist. So
it's very difficult.
So you're not
going
to think of entering that.
Sure. And so a lot of people who...
You need to have somebody around who nags you. Wilbur, when are you going to write that paper?
Or someone who does it for you, who does competing for you, meaning you do the thinking and they compete for you. That could work as well. Partnerships that come, you know, in this form are certainly out there. Anyway,
well, let's think about that for a minute. So if we go back to the woman with the higher level of testosterone who chooses a mate who has a lower level of testosterone, that would be a perfect mate for somebody who tends to be anti-competitive.
Right.
Because how do they get their stuff out there? They get it out through the mate.
In our kind of society, in fact, there are a lot of couples like that, especially, let's say, the past 50 years, where women didn't have a lot of social power. They couldn't go out and do things. There were a lot of limits. So a strong testosterone woman would choose a mate who was less competitive than she was because he could go out for her and do certain things that she could not do. So she could do them through him. That's exactly true.
We're talking about two different kinds of competition, social competition and sexual competition. We haven't really talked about sexual competition yet, but we are talking about types of competition as well. So within the two divisions of competition, this is two only we've talked about. There is the competitor, which is the one that's aggressive. We have a cooperative one who is not a competitor, but they are cooperating with the competitor. Then we have the anti-competitor, also called the defector, I think, in science. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's right.
And then finally, we have the last one, which I have here, is the Schumer?
Shunner.
Oh, the Shunner. Mm-hmm. It said Schumer on my piece of paper.
It looks like Schumer, yes. It's the Shunner. That is the one who selects certain things to side with and to compete along with. But so it's a competitor who likes to compete only with whatever he or she likes or believes in. The difference with the real competitive individual is that a real competitive individual will always compete with everything. It'll be, you know, that one is always going to be in the game.
It's like being somebody who runs races and say, well, I only run against Italian people.
Right. Yes, it's like that. That's a shunner. I only run against Italian people. Right.
Right. And therefore, because that's the only one that really matters, I shun all other competition. Well, a lot of people are like that in social area.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people may choose a religion or a political group that they have an allegiance to, and they will be fierce competitors when they are fighting for a political cause
right.
that they believe in.
Right.
But any other social cause, they don't care about.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so the competitive individual is more of an individualist. And they compete for themselves, by themselves. This, the shunner, is more of a group type of competitor who competes for a group with a group. I think that's the main difference between those two.
And we're talking about social. We're talking about
social.
In the world, ones who want to achieve things. If you've ever wondered to yourself, where do I get that gumption to get ahead? Because you may see yourself as a shunner, somebody who only wants to compete in certain areas, or an anti. You know, if you've got a bad relationship with your father, you tend to wind up being an anti-competitive or mm-hmm. very competitive, one of the two.
Yeah, one of the two.
You either think you're going to win and you're fighting against him your entire life, or you quit completely and say, I refuse to be in it.
I'm above it.
You know, I remember in the 70s, everybody was an anti-competitor.
Sure.
You know, it's let's make love, not war.
Right.
Right?
So, yeah, but now what we're
now
saying
the
is that the sexual competition is very different from social, or it can be, because a person could be highly competitive socially and non-competitive sexually.
Well, the same
or
four
vice
types.
Versa.
Same four types exist. Sexual competitor. You could be an active sexual competitor. You could say, I'm going to get that man. I'm going to get that woman. I'm going to get that person. And you could be really interested. You could build your bigger muscles. You could wear your flowing dresses, you could get your better clothing. You could say, I'm hot and I'm going to get what I want. The competitive type.
Right.
Generally has a little more, but not much more, because you could be very female and be very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Sexually competitive, right? You're just going to be sexually competitive, okay.
Right.
Then there's the cooperator.
Right.
Who says, well, I'll go along with your will. Sexually. So sexually, they meet a male who is very competitive in the world, and they may say, well, I'll go along with what you say.
I think someone like this is the kind of person who needs to be found, needs to be discovered, wants to be found. They don't want necessarily to go out there and make a show of themselves. They want someone to come and find them. So there's no competition in the sense that they don't want to go out there and show themselves in to be compared with other people, to come out ahead, to be the winner. They
not the kind of person who would go to a social gathering and jump in with 1,000 people to try to meet somebody.
No, they
but the kind of person who would sit quietly in a coffee shop sipping a cup of tea, and when this person walks in, that person would walk over to them and say, haven't I seen you
and
somewhere before?
And they tend to fantasize about things like that. They fantasize a lot about being found. About being seen, about being discovered, because their way is not the extroverted way. It's more of a subtle message that they put out.
And they have longer index fingers.
They do. Generally, they do.
And yes, if you haven't heard us from the very beginning, people who have longer index fingers compared to their ring fingers, according to some of the science we've seen, tend to have more estrogen than they do. They do testosterone. I'm getting it right.
Right.
Okay, well, let's talk about the third kind of sexual competitor out there, which is the anti-competitor.
Right, and this is, again, it can be a person who says, well, I am not going to look for anyone. If they want me, they only the one who falls in my lap is going to be the one, because it's not worth the effort. I'm too good for... I'm too good to go out there and pursue someone.
And it's not like the cooperative one.
No, it's a very different
stance. The cooperative one is willing, you know. All you got to do is stroke them and they're willing to respond.
Right.
Right? But this anti-competitor says you got to throw yourself at me.
Yeah, maybe this would be known as the hard to get person.
Very hard to get, right.
The one who is only going to be available when they feel it's the perfect partner, the perfect situation, the perfect thing. Otherwise, they are above it.
And they will tend to attract not people who want to beat them down, because the aggressive ones will see them as too much of a challenge because there's too much easy stuff out there. So they will tend to attract submissive others.
Right.
Who are really struggling and say, oh, please, 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 give me. I'm willing. I'll give you whatever you want.
Well, the hard to get people are actually very popular. Many people find them very attractive. They have a mystery quality about them. You know, you never know how to get through to them, and there's a certain aura of mystique about the anti-competitives, and the fact that they're not in the game, you know, makes them different, more unique. So there's a certain charm.
So now it comes to that point, Roberta, where if you are a social competitor, you could be a wimp sexually.
Well, I wouldn't use that word, but yes, you could be someone who likes to be dominated sexually, who likes to have someone else in control of the sexual in the sexual department, and yet in life you might be the one who runs a corporation.
Well, we've seen it so much. People on the Hill in Washington, where we read a couple of biographies by women who were prostitutes, and they would say that it was the people who had the most power who would come to them for submissive sex, where they would want to be dominated and spanked and, you know, ridiculed.
Right.
So it's very possible that a dominant socially can be a submissive sexually, but also possible that dominant socially could be dominant sexually.
Right, both are possible.
But it's not automatic that...
Yeah, it doesn't go together necessarily that the categories we just gave you are going to match in an individual on the social level as well as the sexual level. They're often different.
I have a funny feeling it's only in humans that it's different, because, you know, if you go after a monkey or a gorilla who is aggressive socially, he's going to be aggressive sexually as well.
Yes, because in humans, it's so complex. I mean, in humans, the society is so complex that, of course, it's going to have all kinds of different ramifications, that with animals, things are so much simpler. So, yes, I agree with you.
You know, and it's unfortunate, but we're out of time, believe it or not, Roberta, and we have...
Well,
gallons more.
One thing I want to mention is that there is yet another level, and that is the biological level.
We just can't go there now because we're going to be signing off, but we will come back and we will discuss that with you, which is the biological stuff. And Roberta just moved her office. Congratulations to you and your new office.
Thank you.
If you want to contact Roberta, you could reach her.
at creativehealthsolutions.org. That's www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
And my friends, I'm redoing my webpage, and I'm looking for photographs of people who would like to be a part of it, who are the audience. Send me a photograph, if you would. Email armand@brainlink.com. The webpage is thepositivemind.com. Be back with you tomorrow. At one, special thanks to you, Roberta, for doing this research. Incredible job today. Thank you.
Thank you, Armand. Thank you for having me on.
Back with you tomorrow, my friends.